It was the middle of the day, not the dead of night, not some dark and empty road, not some isolated stretch of nothing where the world feels far away. No, it was daytime. The sun was up. People were moving around, cars pulling in and out of a parking lot, neighbors going about their morning, life happening in every direction. And yet, in the middle of all of that, in the middle of all of those people and all that noise and all that ordinary Tuesday morning, someone parked a car, got out, walked across a parking lot, and slipped behind a chain-linked fence and vanished. No name, no face, no explanation. Just a shadow, caught on a surveillance camera, wearing white, walking calmly, not looking back. And somewhere behind that camera, behind that footage, behind that fence, was a young woman who was never coming home. Her name was Jennifer Kesey. And this is her story. Welcome to Among Monsters. I'm your host, Maya Vale. Some monsters hide in basements. Some monsters hide in darkness. Some monsters only come out when no one is watching. But some of the most dangerous monsters you will ever encounter walk right past you. They exist in the daylight. They wear normal clothes. They have ordinary faces. They stand in line at the grocery store behind you. They nod at you in a hallway. They smile. And you never know. You never feel the danger. You never sense anything wrong. Because they have learned to move through the world like everyone else. They've learned to blend in, to disappear into the background of an ordinary day. Tonight's story is one of the most haunting disappearances in modern American history. Not because it happened in some faraway place, not because the victim was reckless or naive, but because it happened to someone who was doing everything right. Someone who was careful, someone who was smart, someone who had her whole life in front of her. And in the span of one ordinary morning, she was gone. And the person responsible has been hiding in plain sight ever since. To understand what happened to Jennifer Kesey, you first have to understand who she was. Because Jennifer wasn't a statistic. She wasn't a headline. She was a person, a real, full, complicated, beautiful person. And she deserves to be remembered that way. Jennifer Lynn Kesey was born on June 11th, 1981. She grew up in Bradenton, Florida, the oldest of two children, a daughter, a sister, a friend. By the time she was in her 20s, Jennifer had already built a life that most people spend years working toward. She graduated from the University of Central Florida. She landed a job as a financial analyst at a company called Central Florida Investments. She was good at what she did, really good. The kind of employee who shows up early and stays late and remembers the details that other people miss. At 24 years old, she had just bought her own condo, a place at the Masonic at Molina Complex in Orlando, Florida. Her own space, her own address, her own piece of the world. Her parents, Drew and Joyce Kesey, described her as someone who had both feet on the ground at all times. She wasn't impulsive. She wasn't careless. She was the kind of person who thought things through, who made plans, who kept her word. She had a boyfriend named Rob Allen. They had been together long enough that people around them assumed a future was coming. A life together. Maybe a wedding. Maybe a family. Jennifer was moving forward in every direction, career, home, relationship, future. All of it building towards something. She also had a routine. And I want you to remember that, because routines are not comfort. Routines are safety. Routines are the way we tell ourselves that tomorrow is predictable. That if we do the same things in the same order, the world will behave itself. And most of the time, that's true. But sometimes, a routine becomes a roadmap for someone who is watching. January 2006. Jennifer had just came back from a trip to St. Croix in the U.S., Virgin Islands. She and Rob had taken a vacation together. Sun and water and the kind of slow, easy time that reminds you why life is worth living. By all accounts, the trip was wonderful. Rob and Jennifer came home happy, relaxed, together. January 23rd was a Monday, the first full day back. Back to the schedule, back to the condo, back to the rhythm of regular life. Jennifer went to work. She came home. She talked to Rob on the phone that evening. Just a regular conversation. How was your day? I'm tired. I'm going to get some sleep. Nothing alarming, nothing out of place. She had dinner, laid out her work clothes for the next morning, the way so many of us do, setting up tomorrow before tonight is over. She went to bed, and somewhere in the darkness of that ordinary night in Orlando, Florida, something shifted. She didn't know it. She couldn't have. But the last normal night of Jennifer Kesey's life was already behind her. January 24th, 2006, a Tuesday. Jennifer was expected at work. She had an early start. She was the kind of employee who arrived before she had to. But that morning, she didn't arrive. At first, her coworkers weren't too concerned. Traffic in Orlando can be a nightmare. Maybe she had car trouble. Maybe something came up. But they called her. No answer. They called again. Still nothing. And then they called her parents. Drew and Joyce Kesey tried reaching their daughter too. Phone ringing and ringing and going nowhere. They knew something was wrong. You have to understand, this wasn't a young woman who ignored her phone. This wasn't someone who went off the grid without telling anyone. Jennifer was reliable. She was reachable. She checked in. The silence was deafening. By midday, her parents were already in the car driving to her condo in Orlando. Because sometimes a parent's instinct doesn't wait for proof. Sometimes the silence itself is loud enough. When Drew and Joyce Kesey arrived at the Masonic at Millina, they found the worst kind of normal. Everything looked fine. Nothing was broken. Nothing was overturned. No shattered glass. No signs of violence. No obvious chaos. And yet everything was deeply, profoundly wrong. Jennifer's bed had been slept in and left behind. Her clothes, the ones she'd laid out the night before, were still there, waiting. Her jewelry was on the counter. And here is the detail that cuts the deepest. Her purse was gone. Her phone was gone. Her keys were gone. Which means she got up, she got dressed, she grabbed her things. She left her condo under her own power, on her own two feet, intending to go somewhere. But her car was gone too. And Jennifer Kesey was nowhere. It's that combination that turns unease into terror. Because she clearly left. She was clearly on her way somewhere. But she never got there. Whatever happened to Jennifer Kesey happened between the front door of her condo and the rest of the world. In that tiny gap between leaving and arriving, she vanished completely. The Kesey family contacted Orlando Police Department immediately. Thankfully, and this is worth noting, investigators did not wait the traditional 24 to 48 hours that people often assume is required before filing a missing persons report. They recognized the severity right away. A young woman, missing from her routine, no contact with anyone, car gone. This was a case, a real one. And time was already running out. The investigation began almost immediately. Her workplace was contacted, Her friends were interviewed. Her neighbors were questioned. Detectives pulled phone records. They checked surveillance cameras at the condo complex. They looked for anything that could tell them where she went and who she might have been with. What they found in the first couple of days gave them hope. And then it broke their hearts. 2 days after Jennifer disappeared, January 26, 2006, her car was found, a 2004 black Chevy Malibu. Now, here's where the story could have turned. Here's where the investigation could have caught a break. Because the car wasn't miles away. It wasn't in another county. It wasn't abandoned in some remote location. It was 1 mile from Jennifer's condo. 1 mile. Parked at a nearby apartment complex called the Huntington on the Green. And it wasn't parked frantically. It wasn't wedged in at a strange angle or left blocking something. It was parked neatly, properly, the way you park if you had all the time in the world and no reason at all to rush. That detail is significant. It means whoever drove that car there, whoever moved that car 1 mile away and left it like nothing happened, was calm, controlled, not panicking. The kind of calm that comes from either being very certain you won't get caught or not caring if you do. The car was processed for evidence, fibers, prints, trace materials. Some evidence was found, but investigators have never publicly confirmed whether it produced any actionable leads. What they did find, though, was far more important, or at least it should have been. The Huntington on the Green apartment complex had security cameras, and on those cameras was a person parking Jennifer's car, getting out, walking away. This was the moment. This was the break. The whole investigation could pivot on this footage, except for one detail so frustrating it almost defies belief. Every single frame that would have captured the person's face was blocked by fence posts. Not one frame, not two, every single frame. As the person walked across the parking lot and moved towards the exit, the camera angle and the placement of the fence worked together in the most infuriating possible way. Step after step after step, frame after frame after frame, a post blocked the face. Like the world itself was hiding something. Investigators were left with this, a figure, somewhere between 5'3" and 5'5", average built, wearing white, possibly a white top, light-colored pants, moving calmly across the lot, not running, not looking around, just walking, and then gone. That footage was eventually released to the public. Investigators hoped someone would recognize the walk, the clothing, the build. The nation watched it. Millions of people. And still, no name. Still, no identity. Still, nothing. Just a figure in white, moving through the frame and disappearing behind a fence. It is, to this day, one of the most haunting pieces of surveillance footage ever released in a missing persons case. Because the answer is right there, right in front of you, and you still can't reach it. While investigators were processing the surveillance video footage and searching for leads, they started looking more carefully at Jennifer's world, at the people around her, at the environment she lived in, at who might have access to her routine. And something surfaced. At the time of Jennifer's disappearance, there was ongoing construction at Masonic at Malena Complex. Work crews. Workers coming and going at different hours. People who weren't residents. People who had access to the property, but not to the building itself. And Jennifer had said something to her family at some point before she disappeared. Jennifer had mentioned that some of the construction workers made her uncomfortable. She felt watched. That certain worker had a way of looking at her that made her skin crawl, that she didn't like it. She was cautious enough to notice, careful enough to mention it. But the world doesn't always give us the tools to act on discomfort before it becomes something worse. Investigators looked into the construction workers. Some were undocumented. Some left the area. Some couldn't be fully accounted for. The theory that one of the workers had been watching Jennifer, studying her schedule, learning when she left work, noting the pattern of her mornings, became one of the most persistent lines of investigation. It would explain so much. The precision of the timing, the confidence of whoever moved her car, the total absence of evidence. Someone who worked that property, who would know where the cameras were, would know the blind spots, would know how to move without being seen. Nothing was ever proven. No one was ever charged. But the theory never went away, because it fits. One of the most unsettling aspects of Jennifer's disappearance is this. There is no crime scene. In most abduction cases, even the most carefully executed ones, there is something left behind. A disturbed area, a scuff on the pavement, a broken branch, a dropped item, a sound that someone heard but didn't think about it until later. In Jennifer's case, nothing. No sign of a struggle outside her condo. No blood, no drag marks, no witness who saw or heard anything. It is as if Jennifer Kesey walked out of her front door and the world simply swallowed her. The kind of disappearance requires two things, speed and planning. Speed because in a populated apartment complex on a weekday morning, any extended confrontation would have drawn attention. This had to be fast, faster than the surrounding world could react to, and planning. Because you don't move that fast unless you already know exactly what you're going to do. Whoever took Jennifer Kesey had thought about it, had mapped it out, had a plan for every step, including how to move her car far enough to buy time and close enough to get away on foot. This was not random. This was someone who had been paying very close attention. In the days and weeks following Jennifer's disappearance, the investigation expanded. Local media picked up the story, then national media. Jennifer's face was everywhere. Her parents spoke on camera. Rob, her boyfriend, spoke. Friends spoke. Anyone who might know something was urged to come forward. The family set up a foundation, findjennifer.org. They offered rewards. They kept the case in front of the public. Tips came in from across the country. Every tip was followed up. Every lead was pursued, and one by one, they went nowhere. Investigators looked at Rob Allen. In any missing person case, the partner is looked at. It's procedure. It's necessary. And Rob cooperated fully. He was cleared. They looked at the construction workers. They went through records, crossed names, tracked down former employees. No arrests. They reviewed every frame of that parking lot footage again and again. They released it publicly. They enhanced it. They analyzed the figure's gait, posture, movement pattern. Nothing that led to a name. And slowly, painfully, the momentum of the investigation began to slow. Tips became less frequent. Media coverage began to cycle away. The case moved from urgent to open, from headline to file, but not for the Kesey family, never for them. Drew and Joyce Kesey did not accept silence. If the system was moving slowly, they would move on their own. If investigators were running out of leads, they would find new ones. If the world was starting to forget, they would make it remember. They hired private investigators. They reached out to experts. They made themselves experts themselves. Learning the language of missing person cases, understanding how investigations worked, knowing what questions to ask and when. They launched a public awareness campaign unlike almost anything seen before in a missing persons case. They spoke to anyone who would listen. They appeared on television. They updated the website. They pushed for legislation. In 2012, Drew and Joyce filed a lawsuit to gain access to the investigative file. They wanted to see what investigators had seen. They wanted to know what leads had been followed and which ones hadn't. They were determined to find any gap, any overlooked detail, anything that might crack the case open. That legal fight lasted years because they refused to give up, because Jennifer wasn't a case number to them. She wasn't a file on a shelf or a name on a cold case list. She was their daughter. She was the little girl who grew up and worked hard and bought her own home and had her whole future in front of her. And someone took her. And Drew and Joyce Kesey were not going to let that person hide forever. Years passed. The case stayed open. And then, in 2017, the Orlando Police Department did something that gave the Kesey family a reason for hope again. They released a new image. Using technology that hadn't been available in 2006, investigators enhanced the original surveillance footage. They worked to sharpen the blurry, frustrating figure from the parking lot. And what they came back with was more detail. Not a face, still not a face, but a composite sketch, a facial reconstruction, a best attempt based on everything they could pull from that footage at what this person might look like. The image was released publicly. It showed a person of a relatively small frame, specific features, a face finally put to that shadow. It was not a confirmed identity. It was a reconstruction. But it was more than they'd had for 11 years. Once again, the tips came in. And once again, none of them closed the case. But investigators hadn't stopped. And the Kesey family certainly hadn't stopped. And the surveillance footage, that maddening, heartbreaking piece of evidence, had given up something new, even after more than a decade. That means something. That tells you this case still has room to move. Jennifer Kesey was taken on the morning of January 24, 2006. Most investigators and analysts who have studied this case believe the following. She got up that morning as planned. She got dressed. She grabbed her things. She walked out of her condo, likely headed to the parking area to get to her car. And somewhere in that short walk, she was taken. Quickly, quietly, efficiently. Her attacker or attackers likely already had a vehicle nearby. They subdued Jennifer and moved her before anyone in the complex could see what was happening. Then, later, someone drove her car 1 mile to the Huntington on the Green and left it there, parked neatly, calmly, as if running a completely ordinary errand. This person, the figure in the footage, then walked away through the parking lot, face blocked by every fence post at every critical frame, and disappeared. Whether the person who drove the car is the same person who took Jennifer or an accomplice has never been confirmed. But the behavior, that eerie, deliberate calm, suggests someone comfortable with what they were doing. Someone who wasn't doing this for the first time. Or someone who had planned it so thoroughly that even the adrenaline of the act couldn't shake them. There are details in this case that stay with you long after you've heard them. The fence post. Think about that for a moment. In a world where surveillance cameras catch license plates from a quarter mile away, in a world where we are photographed dozens of times a day without ever noticing, this one person on this one morning walked across the parking lot in such a way that every post in that fence fell perfectly between the camera and their face, step after step, frame after frame. Either the luckiest coincidence in criminal history or someone who knew exactly where that camera was pointed. If it's the latter, if whoever drove that car knew the camera's angle, then this was someone who had scouted that location, who had stood in the parking lot on some earlier day, looked up at the camera, walked the path, and figured out how to move through it invisibly. That level of preparation is terrifying. And then there's the 1 mile radius. Why park the car 1 mile away? Close enough to walk back to wherever they came from. Far enough to separate Jennifer from her vehicle. It suggests someone on foot or someone who had another vehicle waiting nearby. It suggests a plan with multiple steps, a plan that had been thought through. Let's talk about that figure one more time, because I don't think we can talk about this case without sitting with what that footage represents. There is a person, a real, living, breathing human being, somewhere in the world right now, in all likelihood. And we have video of them. We have footage of the moment they drove a missing woman's car to a parking lot and walked away from it. We can see their clothes. We can see their body language. We can see the way they move. And yet, after nearly two decades, we still don't know who they are. That footage has been seen by millions of people. It has been analyzed by professionals. It has been enhanced with modern technology. It has been studied from every angle. And that person has never been definitively identified. They've been walking around free for going on 20 years now, living their life, while Jennifer's family has spent those same 20 years searching for answers. Whoever that figure is in the white clothing, they know something. Maybe they know everything. And the most haunting part is this. They might be completely ordinary. A neighbor, a former coworker, someone who lives in Orlando and goes to the grocery store and waves at people they know. Someone invisible. Not because they're remarkable, but because they learn to look like everyone else. A cold case is a strange and cruel thing. It is not a closed case. The distinction matters. A cold case is a wound that hasn't healed. It's an open file that just doesn't get the attention it once did. It's a family still waiting while the rest of the world moves forward. Jennifer's case has never been closed. The Orlando Police Department has maintained it as an active investigation. And over the years, the case has had renewed moments of attention. New technology, new tips, new public appeals. Every few years, something brings it back into the light, a documentary, an anniversary, a new piece of investigative work. And each time, the Kesey family is there, still speaking, still searching, still refusing to let their daughter be forgotten. Drew Kesey, in particular, has become one of the most vocal advocates for missing persons families in the country. He has testified before legislators. He had pushed for changes to how missing person cases are handled. He has turned his grief into action over and over and over again. Because what else do you do when the system runs out of answers? You become the answer yourself. Jennifer Kesey's case is not just one story. It is a window into something much larger. In the United States, tens of thousands of adults go missing every year. And while many of those cases are resolved, people who left voluntarily, people who are found safe, thousands are not. Thousands of families are living what the Kesey family lives, waiting, searching, hoping. And the thing that makes Jennifer's case particularly haunting is exactly what makes so many of these cases go unsolved. No body, no confirmed crime scene. No witness who saw the critical moment. One piece of footage that shows everything and reveals nothing. It is a masterclass in how completely a person can disappear and how thoroughly a perpetrator can vanish into ordinary life when the circumstances align in the wrong way. The surveillance footage at Huntington on the Green wasn't defective. It wasn't malfunctioning. It captured what it was supposed to capture. But the world had different plans. And so the most critical evidence in the case is 20 years of unsolved mystery. To whoever is watching this right now who might know something, the Orlando Police Department tip line is still active. FindJennifer.org is still operating. If you recognize that figure, if you remember something from January 2006 in Orlando, if you have ever been connected to the Masonic at Malena or the Huntington on the Green and heard something you weren't sure mattered, it matters. Every piece of information matters. Jennifer's family has been waiting for nearly 20 years, and the person who can end that wait might be reading this right now. You do not have to carry what you know forever. Before I close this episode, I want to do something. I want to stop talking about the case and just talk about Jennifer, because it is so easy in true crime to let the mystery swallow the person, to talk about evidence and timelines and surveillance footage so much that the human being at the center of it all starts to feel like a concept instead of a life. Jennifer Kesey was 24 years old. She liked to travel. She just came back from St. Croix, for goodness sake. A woman living her life, taking a vacation, building memories with someone she cared about and was proud of it. She worked hard and she was proud of it. She bought her own condo. She built her own future from the ground up. She had parents who loved her fiercely, a family that would go to the ends of the earth for her, a boyfriend who cared deeply, friends who still hold her in their hearts. She had a laugh. She had a favorite food. She had opinions and memories and dreams. She had a whole rest of her life waiting to happen. And someone took that. Someone walked into the ordinary Tuesday morning of Jennifer Kesey's life and ended it without remorse, without consequences, without justice. Not yet. What happened to Jennifer Kesey? I've sat with this case for a long time. I've read everything I could find. I've looked at the footage. I've thought about the timeline. I've thought about the fence posts, the parking lot, the 1 mile drive, the construction workers, the calm walk away from a stolen car. And I keep coming back to the same place. That was not random. Someone knew Jennifer's routine. Someone knew her schedule. Someone knew the layout of her complex well enough to move quickly and quietly. And someone knew how to drive her car 1 mile away and leave it there and walk out of frame without showing their face to the camera. That is not a crime of impulse. That is a crime of patience. Someone waited. Someone watched. Someone chose a moment and acted on it. And then they went back to their life. Whatever that life looked like, however ordinary or extraordinary, they went back to it. And Jennifer Kesey never got to go back to hers. Some stories end with resolution. Some stories end with answers, with justice, with a family finally being able to exhale. This one hasn't, not yet. Jennifer Kesey is still classified as a missing person. Her case is still open. Her family is still searching. And somewhere out there, in the world that keeps spinning whether we like it or not, is a person who knows exactly what happened on the morning of January 24, 2006. A person who has lived with that knowledge every single day. A person who parked a car, walked through a parking lot, slipped behind a fence, and became nothing but a shadow on a surveillance tape. A shadow that millions of people have watched. A shadow that has never spoken. A shadow that has never been brought to justice. But shadows don't disappear on their own. Someone casts them. And somewhere, the light will find what's casting this one. Until that day comes, Jennifer Kesey is not forgotten. She is a daughter. She is a friend. She is a story that isn't finished. And this family, this extraordinary, relentless, heartbroken, determined family, will not stop until it is. I'm Maya Vale, and this has been Among Monsters. Stay aware, stay curious, stay close to the people who love you, because sometimes the most dangerous monsters in the world are the ones you never see coming, and sometimes The most powerful thing you can do is refuse to let them stay invisible.